This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Hey everyone, welcome in to our Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick Maher today, live from Las Vegas, Circus Sportsbook Studios. Michael Lombardi with us, as always, from the East Coast. A little turmoil, injury news in Buffalo, Michael. Not what we expected heading into the week, but here we are, and that line is really falling in Minnesota and Buffalo here with the status of Josh Allen up in the air.
You know, Ben, it's really falling. I mean, I think it's, what, five now? Maybe going to 4.5?
Book has actually gone to 3.5 here in Vegas. We're at 4 or 4.5 at this point. So even in the last hour, it's continued to drop a little bit.
You know, when I was at the Browns, Bernie Kosar, who was limited in his skill set, right? Bernie couldn't really run. He wasn't fast. His arm strength was average, not great. And he went back to pass earlier in the season, and Albert Lewis, or one of the corners, or Cherry, I'm not sure which one, hit him and hurt his elbow and had the same mannerisms that I saw Josh Allen have during that game. And in my mind immediately went to that Chiefs Browns game. And Kosar never was the same player afterwards because he never had the arm to make up for the lack of that injury. And I'm not suggesting that with Josh Allen because he threw a 70-yard bomb two plays later or something. So, but I felt like the way he kept rubbing it and kept playing around with it, there's something wrong. And, you know, nobody's saying anything out of Buffalo. I watched Sean McDermott's press conference just the other day. He didn't look like he was too happy. Now, they're going to say that yesterday I heard that they said he's going to try to, it's going to manage the pain. We shall see. I think there's something there. This line wouldn't be moving like this if there wasn't.
Totally agree with you. We had Will Hill on yesterday with Mike Pritchard, and he'd already fired a bet on Vikings plus 6.5. He was pretty steadfast in his belief that it would be a missed game for Allen. Just to read the report from this morning from Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network saying it is definitely an elbow sprain, the UCL sprain, which he's dealt with in the past, not believed to be a major, major injury, which means the belief is that it is something he can play through. Albeit, for this week, status clearly in doubt, and they held him out of his normal media availability. And you now wonder, Michael, if this was opening at 8 or 8.5 at most books, how big of an adjustment do you make now if you try to figure out and handicap the drop-off from Allen to Case Keenum, who would be your starter against his former team in Minnesota on Sunday?
Well, first of all, let's just back up a little bit. The six-back attack's out of the question now. So you go into the game, and you're Ed Donatell, and you don't have to worry about the quarterback runner, which opens up a whole other your game sheet is now completely changed, right? You can play cover five on third down. You can do a lot of different things now. And it exposes the offensive line of Buffalo, which the Jets kind of exposed a little bit last week. They got after them pretty good. And so I think ultimately that's where we're headed. When I put this game together, and I thought Buffalo would have been able to cover that spread last week. But again, they didn't play well in the fourth quarter, which got them. So, but when I put my numbers together yesterday, I had this game as a, let's see here, I got Buffalo as a, I had this as a 7.09 game with the quarterback, with all the numbers of my numbers in there. And that accounts for Allen playing. If Allen's not playing, I think this is a 3.5-point game.
And what you have to figure out now is a better, right? Even if you missed that initial big move, it's moved now 4 to 4.5 points from the opener. Is there still value there in looking at Minnesota, where you have to think, Michael, this closes 2.5 or 3, depending on, because right now the books are basically splitting the difference. The news is clearly indicating towards him not playing. And it now gets back to the issues you just talked about on the run blocking front, where as I look at the updated numbers now, having just been refreshed today through the first 9 weeks of the season, Buffalo, at least in the ESPN, the run block win rate, you can look at other, you know, offensive line metrics, but pretty much across the board, 21st or 22nd, depending on where you look. It's been the one weakness for a team that grades top half in the league at basically every category. So if you now take Allen out of the mix here and you're probably relying more on that running game, how big of a concern would that be against a Viking team that, for as much as we've criticized their lack of ability to win games in blowouts by margin, still are a top 12 team defending both the run and the pass?
Well, as you know, I go through it every Tuesday. I go through my 17 categories and 19 categories, actually. And Buffalo's in the top 7 in 12 of those categories. Minnesota's at 6 of them. Minnesota's in 6 between 8 and 12. They're in the top 12 in six categories, and this is offensively and defensively. Mm-hmm. And they're only weak in red zone defense, and they're only weak in incomplete passes thrown against them. So that's their only negative. So this is actually kind of a touchdown game based on the numerical value of these two teams, how they line up. And look, we know the Bills have no weaknesses, but all their strengths are tied to their main offensive weapon. You know, can Case Keenum throw the ball deep like this guy can to Diggs? Is he going to be able to make these throws? I mean, nobody's scared of Case Keenum. They're going to attack him. They're going to blitz him. It's a whole different game. It's a whole different game. And then Minnesota, you know, one of the things I think gets Minnesota quite a bit is they punt the ball quite a bit. And so because they punt the ball so damn much, you think they're not having a great game. And yet in reality, they end up doing enough to win the game. Like last week against – I had them last week, Ben. Mm-hmm. I had him as an 8-point favorite against Washington. And you say, that's insane. But if they score that touchdown at the end instead of trying to just delay the game, they're going to win the game by 7.
Right.
You know? And if it wasn't for the pass interference penalty on the official, I don't think Washington was going to score.
No. You know what it reminded me a lot? The flow as you were looking back at the Washington Commanders game. I should say the Vikings Commanders game from last week to kind of figure out, again, what we think in this Vikings situation, potentially going up against a backup in Buffalo for now week 10. It was a flow that reminded me a lot of that Packer-Washington game a few weeks ago where Green Bay's up early. They had ample opportunity to put the game away and just didn't. And Taylor Heinicke made a couple of throws and all of a sudden it flipped. The difference was the fourth quarter execution for Minnesota was much, much better. Heinicke this past week throws the ghastly interception to, there was what, like five different guys he throws the ball up to, intercepted by Harrison Smith. But how much, at least on the Minnesota front, Kevin O'Connell, his ability to manage these games as a coach, have you looked at as being so much more of a strength than what Minnesota had in the past with Mike Zimmer, where they blew so many of these one-score games?
Well, I think, too, when you watch the tape, Danielle Hunter's really good, right? And so he killed the right tackle for Washington. I mean, he was a problem the entire game. You know, and so they're ninth in sack per place as a team this year, so they really improved in that area. Last year, they were the most interesting team defensively, right? So they were really good on third down last year, but couldn't get off the. But they gave up a ton of yards on first and second down. This year, they've obviously fixed that. Now, they've gotten better. They're good in the first half. They're not as good on defense in the second half, but what they really are good at is they are efficient in terms of managing the game and handling it. You know, they're eighth in points per play. They're 12th in fourth quarter. They're able to come back in the fourth quarter, so they do a great job in that area. And really, the only thing that you really worry about them is, and this is what gets them, is they're 24th in punts per play. So they never pass the visual test. You always see them punt, and you say, they can't be very good. But yet they do enough to win the game.
Yeah. It's amazing to look at it now. And from the betting standpoint, when you have the stretch of six straight wins by one score. Vikings have been favored in every game. Had you been just teasing against Minnesota, as weird as that is to say, like if you're just throwing blind teasers, Michael, every week on the team playing Minnesota, you've cashed every single week except the Green Bay game in week one. Kind of wild to say that through 9 weeks, you'd be 8-1 betting teasers. I should say it's 8 weeks since they had the bye. You'd be 7-1 betting teasers against Minnesota for a team that, as you talk about, has been so good at being able to pull out these wins. I wonder what you look. I mean, it's probably going to be hard to tease Buffalo. You're going to be a short favorite. You don't want to tease through the zero. But it's something I look at going forward and say, as much as we can rip the Vikings first, as you talk about, a lot of punts, not really passing the eye test. I've started to come around on this team as thinking, all right, they're at least with the coaching, like going to be a legitimate threat once we get to the postseason. Now sitting tied with Dallas here for third in the NFC odds board at about plus 550.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're well coached. They have a quarterback who can make some plays. I mean, they get Hockenson in there. He's the leading receiver in the game after showing up on Tuesday, right? I mean, he's only going to get better as he moves forward. And they're able to, you know, they can score. They're eighth in the league in points per play. So they do get some things done. They're 14th in third down offense. They can stay on the field at times. A lot of it comes down to, can they protect Cousins? Can they keep Cousins upright and not let him get skitsky, not let him get worried about the pass rush? And I think that's going to be the key. But I think Minnesota and Tennessee are bettors' nightmares because we know they don't look very good, right? Nobody, I mean, and they're like, they're carrying a time bomb with them, and you're just afraid that this is the week it's going to go off, right? You know, like, That's kind of what I think everybody had that sense about Seattle, too. Seattle's, right. I know they're winning, but are they really any good? I don't want to get caught with the time bomb. I mean, the fact that they're a dog to Tampa Bay is a shock to me. If you just watch two teams play, yeah. Tampa and the Seattle, and you which team is playing better, it's not even close. Now you say, well, they're playing in Tampa. No, they're playing in Germany. Like, Seattle's by – that's why I never believed – I didn't understand how Seattle was a dog to Arizona last week.
Was totally with you on that. We talked about it on the Wednesday show. That was a nice little teaser leg for Seattle. But and that's been probably the biggest discrepancy in the betting market this week as far as even respected bettors taking positions on both sides, where you look at the market now, Tampa was about a point and a half, two-point favorite.
The sharps are all over Tampa.
And they've been getting bet this week. And really, you know, the big argument I've heard – When you listen to why people are on Tampa the way that they are, it's if you just eliminate all the priors, and which, again, I you know, you could quibble with, should we really do that? But if you're taking all the prior data from this season away, you're looking at the rosters, Tampa is better. That's the argument overall. But, I mean, you kind of have to.
I'm not sure about that.
I think Seattle's
defense is way better than you think it is, and they tackle really well. Like, Seattle's defense is tackling really well.
And we got to pick
that back up in the next block.
I think we will do that.
I'm not sure that logic's very right.
Right, and again, that's just what I've heard in the general, you know, the betting market from people who are on Tampa this week. We should dive into that a little bit more because the money is going on to Tampa. We also have a lot of fun here the rest of the show. Harry Gagnon, as always, joins us in hour number two, and we'll get to our guest here in hour number one in a little bit. Scott Long out of Indianapolis. He's an outstanding comedian, and boy, is there some comedy going on with the Indianapolis Colts. So still a lot for us to get into. We're just getting started. We'll talk Seahawks and Bucks next on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. One additional note on that Minnesota-Buffalo line we were talking about last segment, Michael. Also, the total we should point out, that was opened at about 48. Yeah. We're down to 43.5 or 44 as I update the odds screen right in front of me. And behind me at Circa, they are down to 3.5 on the Buffalo side. So considering this is a day, like Wednesdays is when the Westgate Super Contest, those lines lock. And tomorrow is when the Circa Millions lines lock. This is a big 24 hours, too, for the people setting the contest line. So keep that in mind if you are playing in the contest.
And we're not going to – I mean, it's going to be hard. I would assume that Josh Allen is a do-not-practice today.
For sure.
You know, and – look, the weather in Buffalo this weekend, you know, we've kind of went – last weekend was almost Indian summer, but now we're into winter. And, you know, the gales of November. Tomorrow is the wreck of the Emma Fitzgerald. So that really is the beginning for me of the NFL season. And it's going to be 36 overcast with 11-mile-an-hour winds in Buffalo. I mean, that's not – you know, that's not a problem for Josh Allen. It might be a little bit of a problem for our man Case Keenum.
Just a little bit, potentially. And you'd think, yeah, that's why, again, not only is the total coming down due to the potential loss of Josh Allen, but also the weather as well, something you have to consider. We talked about this very briefly at the end of our last segment. We'll pick it up now. Seahawks, Tampa Bay, a game that has probably had the most disagreement within the betting market, where you and I, Michael, we've talked about this over the past couple weeks, feeling like Seattle has really been undervalued in the betting market. And you made them a favorite over Arizona last week. That certainly was a very prescient thought by you as they come out, win by 10 pretty comfortably in the end over Arizona on the road. And you look at the matchup now, opens 1.5 for Tampa on a neutral site at the Allianz Arena there in Munich. Now up to 2.5, and some books have started to touch 3. We're still, and at least at BetMGM, we have gotten up to that 3-point threshold there. What's your number on this game heading in?
I had this game as Seattle should be favored by 2.5. I mean, so let's just go through it, right? Seattle last week. So for bettors who don't watch every game after a game, like I watch every game again, and I spend most of my Tuesday doing that. So when you go back and watch Seattle play in Arizona, the score's 24-14. Arizona gets a couple things going, and it's a critical drive because there's enough possessions left in the fourth quarter. Remember, when you're watching a game, always think how many possessions are left, right? You got to think plays and possessions in the fourth quarter. So you know there's only a few – so they score. Now it's 24-21. And now you're in Seattle's in a tough spot because you're not going to be – if you punt the ball back, you could lose by a point. If you punt the ball back, it could go to overtime. So really the only thing you can do at this point is run the clock out. You've got to get – at under 4 minutes, you've got to get at least three first downs to win the game. So your mindset going out there is, A, score, but, man, we got to get three first downs. And – to me, Arizona knows this. So now we have the perfect scenario of evaluation. We've got to move the ball. We've got to run it or throw it, and they know they have to stop us. And so who wins that? Who wins that confrontation? And when you evaluate good teams always win that confrontation. The Chiefs always move the ball in that situation. New England in the day with Brady always moved the ball. You couldn't get it. Buffalo always moves the ball in that situation. Philly this year has done that. Seattle, too. Seattle moved the ball right down the field, went five plays, 80 yards, and put the game away. Five plays, 80 yards. First play, 40 yards. Biggest play of the game to Noah Fant on a submarine. Boot. You know, and there it is, down the field. And Arizona knows it's coming, and they can't stop it. So, like, I don't think you could dismiss this team. They're in the last five games, they're playing as well as anybody, right? Their points per play is 7. Their points per play defensively is 3rd. I mean, their defense has improved tremendously. They tackle as well as any defense I've seen, and they are fast. And they're not even remotely close to what the Rams put on their field last week. And the Rams were shutting it down. The Rams had them completely shut down. Brady was flustered. The play calling was horrendous on Tampa's part. Let's get that out there. But still, that game was the Rams are not great on defense, and yet they couldn't move the football on them until the last drive of the game.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I just think to me, if you look at this team since they lost to Arizona, since they lost to New Orleans, they have played very effectively defensively. They've created turnovers. They've stopped the run. They've cut down on their points allowed, and their offense has been great.
And also, you think about game state, and for a team like Seattle where you wonder, all right, they look really good playing ahead of the sticks and playing with the lead. What happens when there's a little bit of that in-game adversity where you're down on the road? And you think about the game Sunday, Geno Smith throws just a ghastly pick six, probably the worst throw he's made all season, never sees the rusher coming, tries to lob it up, and it goes the other way. So punt pick six to start the half. After that, Seattle goes touchdown, touchdown, touchdown on their final three drives before kneeling it out. It had to feel like, even though that's an Arizona defense that has had their issues, 19th on an EPA per play allowed basis, That was a team that was top 7 against the run, was figuring to take away that from Seattle, and the Seahawks were going right at that in kind of a one-dimensional game state, going pass first, and they were able to make it work with flying colors, Michael, in the final most important stretches of that game.
No doubt. And, Kenneth Walker can run it. I mean, they're able to make play. They got receivers. I mean, they didn't even have Marquise Goodwin, who the week before was really good. He missed the game. And so, yet, Lockett came in and played well. They got Metcalf going. He was supposed to be out. They run the football. Look, they are running the Rams offense back when the Rams were really good. Back when there was Ram, and this is the Ram offense that Jared Goff was running. And nobody wants to admit this, but Geno's playing better than Jared Goff ever played in that offense.
It's pretty wild.
Some of the throws he made in this game, I know he threw the interception, but like you said, after the interception, I think they went on to score 21 points.
Yeah, 3 for 3 and drives after that. So here's the thing I wonder about this game, though, Michael. It's if you're looking, because we both believe Seattle is going to be able to move the ball on the Tampa defense, one that has taken a big step back defending the run. The big question is, how much do you value the recent performance of Seattle's defense and the long-term numbers, where they still are 21st against the pass, haven't been tremendous at getting pressure again on the season, even though past few weeks Seattle's looked much better in that regard, against Tampa Bay and Tom Brady, where getting pressure is first and foremost the biggest key to slowing him and that offense down. How do you view that matchup going into this week, considering we believe on the other side Seattle will be able to move the ball? How does Tampa do that and match up against Seattle's D?
I thought Seattle's D has gotten much better over the last few weeks. I think they can put pressure. I think they sacked our guy 5 times in the game. They were really effective. Not that they're a great offensive line, but he can move out of the way. Brady's not going to move out of the way. The fact that they can tackle is also a big issue. You know, they're covering well. They've got really good speed. This Jordan Brooks kid makes every single tackle on the field. It's remarkable. You know, so I don't know. I mean, other than the fact that they've got Tom Brady and they were a really good team last year, and we saw Seattle look so bad to start the season. Like, one of the things that I've always said, and I've kind of violated this a little bit in my betting recommendations, is who's playing good?
Yeah.
Like, who's playing good? And who's not playing good? And I know Tampa won last week and pushed for a lot of people, but they're not playing good. Whereas Seattle is playing really well. You know, they had 24 plays in the fourth quarter. They were able to dominate that game in the fourth. They took it over. I just think, to me, you know, they scored 14 points on what, 20 plays, and they got 10 first downs. I mean, that tells me they're playing really well. And Arizona couldn't do anything against them. Arizona had the one drive. It took them 14 plays to go 81 yards. I mean, when you give up that, and they had 6 first downs on that drive, so you're not giving up big plays.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
And it's such a simple thing, but as you point out, it gets overlooked a lot. And like, if Tampa doesn't come back, if the Rams don't go prevent defense on the final drive and just let them work their way down the field.
It was one play, Ben, right? Yeah. It was the one play. I mean, they throw the seam to the tight end. And I mean, if he doesn't have that play, they have nothing. That was Tampa's longest play of the game.
Happened down the final drive of the game. And what's funny about this matchup, the two teams, Seattle and Tampa Bay, their two opponents from a week ago, Arizona and the Rams, they square off in a classic, what do you do with this sort of line game? It's Rams by 3. That just seems like a standard placeholder because nobody knows what to do with either of these teams. How do you not just tease Arizona up, Michael, and say, Rams in this awful offense behind Matthew Stafford beat me by 2 scores? Isn't that pretty much the simple way to play this one?
I don't know. I mean, I think to me, if the Rams can't beat this Cardinal team, they just beat them once, right? They beat them before. You know, they got to beat them. I mean, to me, I don't think they're very good at all. I don't think the Rams are very good at all. I think offensively they're broken. They're running the Lions offense with Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm. Remember that, Ben? All pass, can't run. You know, quarterback gets killed. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. It's 3. You have to be a brave person to want to lay a full 3 with the Rams. You also have to be brave, similarly, to bet the Cardinals right now in any particular spot, not getting more than a field goal. So kind of between a rock and a hard place is better heading into this week. When we return, we have the comedian. We're excited to talk with Scott Long. Does a great job co-hosting All Indiana Bets. Talk some Colts with our guy Scott. He joins the show next.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
College basketball is now underway, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide. At over 400 pages, it's our biggest betting guide ever, with odds, trends, power ratings, and analysis on every team. Our team of experts, including Greg Hoops Peterson and Matt Eumanns, provide their predictions for win totals, futures, conference champions, tournament teams, and breakdowns of all 60 coaching changes since last season. The only way to get the guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $99 and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do all the way through the Super Bowl. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm Ben Wilson, back with Michael Lombardi as we welcome in our first guest of the day here on the Lombardi Line, Scott Long from Indianapolis. Give him a follow at Scott Comedy. Speaking of comedy, Scott, where you're at, those Indianapolis Colts. Speaking of comedy, how about that for a segue here? Because, like, what is going on with this Colts team and all that we are seeing now develop between the owner, Jim Irsay, and the firings and the hirings and everything in between?
Well, the Colts are a magical build of how you have a team without a left tackle, without a game-breaking wide receiver, without a tight end for 5 years, without a quarterback for 4 years. So people were so over their skis with how this team is going to be, I guess because you got a $20 million guard and a $12 million center. So, yes, it's kind of cats and dogs mating in the streets right now in Indianapolis. It's crazy town. And we have the perfect leader for that. Jim Irsay, who every time he looks at Quentin Nelson thinks, I could have bought 22 John Lennon guitars for what I'm paying you. And you used to be the road grader, and now you're the pancake. I mean, he's been laying on the ground. He's been, I would point to him more than the quarterback or anything, the reason why that team's losing. They cannot run short yardage. And if you look at his run blocking grades, he's the worst. He's like, he's below average in the NFL, and he's the top paid guard by like $3.5 million.
Well, I think, Scott, you're right. I think to me, all their issues as a team really start up front, and they start off with really being soft. And when Gooch was there in Frank's first season, they were actually a really good offensive line, and they have gotten worse over time. And I think that when Frank Wright looks back on his career, I think he put the wrong line coach in. The players aren't playing to the highest level. Costanza kept telling him he wanted to retire, and they never really listened to it, so that's an issue. But I want to ask you this. I mean, what do you think I've always want to think of things what I call second-order thinking. Like, okay, we did this, and then what's going to happen? How do you see this Jeff Saturday thing unfolding? And it seems to me like if he wins one or two games, Irsay's liable to keep him as the head coach.
I think that's very true. I'm not even sure he has to win a couple games. Look, they're pretty much three games in many ways behind the Titans since they've lost to them twice. How are they going to get in the playoffs unless they win the South? I mean, the Titans have managed to even look good when they don't even have a professional quarterback, because Willis is not. I mean, he's not. He threw the ball 10 times. They're protecting. Vrabel's as good a coach as there is in the NFL. So I think there's a lot of buddy thing with Jim Irsay. He likes to hang out with guys that are cool to him. I mean, he likes to hang out with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. You know, that's who he likes to hang out with. He's disgusting.
They don't even hang out with each other. You know? Scott, Crosby, well, Stills, and Nash don't even hang out with each other. They hate each other. They can't even get in a room together.
That's so true. You know, I could get away with that with any other football expert except Mike Lombardi. Ben, I got to tell you, this is my guru. I followed him at every network. He's been on more networks than like Ted Danson. I mean, it's hard to follow him. He's had more co-hosts than Kelly Ripa. And the guy is always there, and I'm always listening to him. I'm searching him out. I've got like a detective. I'm like, where's Mike going to pop up now? Like Waldo. But now he's been a decent for a couple of years. So I know I haven't got the network. Nothing against you, Ben, but for Mike. Michael Lombardi.
Thank you, Scott.
So, no offense taken.
Yeah, hey, no, it's the truth.
And if you're doing, if you're going to make a music reference, you know that Michael's going to understand it. That's part of it. And so you mentioning the networks you're at, I know you were a writer a long time for Frank Caliendo, who's been a guest here at VSiN. Usually whenever Frank comes on,
he's the best.
He has Patrick and Michael both in tears, essentially. So we'll do our best. Yeah. We're keeping it together today. But so I know you've crossed paths with Michael through that between Fox and ESPN as a writer there. But you're doing a betting show too now in Indiana, and you're getting to you dressed up as Jim Irsay for Halloween. I mean, tell us about that. That has to be one of the more fun assignments of your career.
Well, for 13 years, I'm helping write the sketches with Frank Caliendo at Fox and also at ESPN when he was there. People used to always say, "Well, you write for Frank? Do you write for Terry Bradshaw too?" I'm like, "Do you think I could make up the stuff that that guy comes up with?" No. Frank's the most talented person I've ever worked with, you know, so it's been nice kind of being connected. But this is my chance to get out in front. I've been gambling since, you know, I was a high school student running parlay cards through the halls.
Nice.
So I got this weird little niche of comedy and sports gambling, and we're kind of an irreverent show where we're kind of a gateway to people who want to gamble, but maybe they don't want all the analytics and all the expertise that you might get from that. We do that work, and then we're kind of funny with it too. So it's been fun. One of our sponsors is Evan Williams, so we drink bourbon or tequila on the show. It's kind of like very unique, I'll put it that way, and it's kind of a dream. I work, you know, I talk about football, I gamble, I drink. It was just like my college dream come to life, you know?
I got to get Evan Williams. I got to meet him. I got to get him on the show for bourbon. You know, that'd be good. All right, so since you got a betting show, and before you start drinking, Evan, who do you like this week? Who do you like this week? Is there anything that just jumps out at you besides Buffalo with the uncertainty that Josh Allen's day-to-day?
Yeah, I would lean the Vikings. I probably would have leaned the Vikings even before that. They just seemed to close at the end. Buffalo's had a hard time with that. Last week I was 5-0 in college. I usually feel a little more comfortable with college.
Look at that.
Well, give us college. We'll take them. We'll take any good any plays you have. We'll listen.
I love Penn State this week. They're minus 10.5. They're playing Maryland, who's 2-16 against top 15 teams. And Maryland's best way of moving the ball is with Tua's brother throwing it. That's where Penn State shuts people down. And James Franklin hates Maryland. That's his recruiting rival. I don't think he likes Loxley. They've done well. So that's my strong play on the board. It's hard to ignore when Arizona and UCLA have an over-under of 77.5. I mean, it's nice to be at least knowing you're going to be covering most of the game. And these kind of over 75.5, I did some research today, 11 out of the last 15 times, those games have gone under. So I like those two. My favorite NFL play, Mike was talking about it. This is not really an analytical move. It's just more, Seattle's good. Who would have thought? Yeah. I didn't think at the start of the year, but I watched Geno Smith, and I feel like he's been one of the 5 or 6 best quarterbacks in the NFL. And then you look at the weapons, the wide receivers are way better in Seattle. The running game is way better. I like the direction the younger defense has done. And I like Todd Bowles, but Pete Carroll, who knows? Maybe Russell Wilson was bringing him down or something, because in that circumstance, I like him, even though Seattle's playing at 6:30 in the morning their time. The only thing that has me a little nervous about that game is Tom Brady's played 3 times overseas, but that was with New England, and that was 5, 10, 15 years ago. Mike, you might remember, twice in London, once in Mexico City. They outscored their opponents 113-22, but that was with Patriots teams and definitely not this Buccaneers team. Just the eye test and the quality of coaching that I'm getting out of Seattle, I'll take those 2.5. I love that.
I do, but I think Seattle went over to Germany after Arizona, so I don't know if that 9:30 start's going to be in their body, right? I think so. I'm not sure of that, though. I think that's a great point, but I was told they were heading from Arizona to Germany. I mean, who doesn't want to go to Germany and spend a week? Now, maybe that's a hard thing. I don't know.
I mean, Scott,
I don't know if you've done the –
well, I have not, at least. But look, I'll give you credit. I mean, I think most people, Scott, would think, okay, comedian who's doing gambling picks, he's probably his logic is going to be something like, I went to Maryland one time and had a crab cake thrown at me while doing stand up, so I'm backing Penn State.
That has
those were like really good points you made. So you got to give yourself some more credit here.
Ben's going to play that immediately right after the show. He's going over there right after the show to Penn State. I promise you.
Of course. We don't, we're giving you credit.
Ben, I went further back into this, and I was like doing some research and talking to a friend of mine. Seattle's the second most popular team in Germany.
Interesting.
New England's number one.
Who would have thought that?
So who had that? Did Mike Palm?
Thanks, Scott.
He did not.
Thanks, Scott.
Seattle, Penn State, those are the picks. Hey, Scott, such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. Give him a follow at Scott Comedy on Twitter. We'll return final segment of the hour next on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Make some midweek magic with Light the Lamp Wednesdays at BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Place a $25 wager on any NHL player to score a goal on Wednesdays, and you'll automatically receive $2 in free bets for every score goal in the game, up to $16. Just log into your account or download the app and sign up with BetMGM to get started. Then opt in to the Light the Lamp Wednesdays promotion to receive a $2 free bet for every goal scored in the game, regardless of your prop bet's outcome. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Again, a big thanks to Scott Long for joining the show here on the Lombardi Line. And we're talking, Michael, about all the comedic aspects of this state of the Indianapolis Colts. You fire Frank Reich as a coach, which, as you wrote about at VSiN.com, that was to be expected. It was the move after that. And hiring a guy with zero professional or collegiate coaching experience in Jeff Saturday, albeit a guy who's respected, former head of the NFLPA, but still, how can you really expect that takeover to go smoothly when there's a staff now with zero play calling experience on it as we head into this week against the Raiders?
No play calling experience, no leadership experience. I mean, what's he going to say to the team the night before the game? Go get him, Kipper? Like, yeah. What's he going to do? Like, you know, and so what I don't think he understands this too is when you fire a coach in the NFL, we're not baseball. You know, we saw the Phillies fire Joe Girardi. They hired a new manager and they got to the World Series and they finished, what, two games from winning the World Series. Okay. Baseball's different. Same thing in basketball. We've seen an interim coach come in. Jock Vaughn gets the job at the Nets today. Maybe the Nets will turn it around. Football, since there's only 17 games, the seasons are kind of like, you kind of know where this is going to go. And so the staff, all of a sudden, instead of fighting against the opponent, they start fighting for survival. And what we're going to see moving forward, and I'm not sure it'll happen this week against the Raiders, who's defensively not very good, you know, and everybody moves the ball on the Raiders, including the Houston Texans. I mean, they were a 7-point favorite against the Texans, and they covered that game shockingly, although that was a lot closer game than the 10-point win that they had. So, like, I'm not saying take the Raiders and lay the 6 here, but I'm saying moving forward, when they play against better defensive talent-wise, and they play, the number will not get baked in immediately, because when you get rid of a coach who was part of the strategy of the offense, okay, you got rid of Frank Wright. He was part of the strategy, and you replace him with somebody who doesn't even know what the strategy is. Like, you're down two men. I mean, they fired Marcus Brady a week ago. Like, if they would have kept Brady for another week, and then okay now you got a coordinator, you got a young coach. All right, let's go. Mm-hmm. But they're down two men with no help coming in.
And it's now Parks Frazier, assistant quarterbacks coach. Raise your hand if you knew who Parks Frazier was before 24 hours ago when he was announced to be the play caller there in Indianapolis. Quality control coordinator before that. He's a 30-year-old. He's never called plays. Now he's calling plays. From a logistical standpoint, how does that actually work now, Michael? And just, you have 40 seconds to get a play in. What can you actually expect on the play calling side with a guy who's never done it before and is now working for a head coach who's also never done it before either?
Well, we spend too much time focusing on the actual day of the call, right? So we see these sheets these guys look at, okay? And every sheet is predicated, is pre-called. So if you were to see a sheet, it would say 1st and 10, drive starters. That's a box. It would say 2nd and 8 to 10. These are 5 plays we like. And then it would say 2nd and 4 to 6. These are 5 plays we like. And 2nd and 1, these are 4 plays we like. Whatever. Okay, so the play caller's looking at that list that's predetermined. The strategy to go into the game is on the list. Okay, so once the game starts, it's fairly easy to say, okay, we're going to start off the game doing this and that. But when the game starts to get adjusted, when all of a sudden they're playing cover 8 and we thought they were going to play cover 3, or they're playing cover 8 differently than we thought they were going to play, how are we going to adjust that out? How are we going to handle that? What are we going to do to offset that? Who's making that call? Saturday's like Ed Orgeron. He's going to have no influence on the game at all.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he hires Ed Orgeron for consultation. I mean, what do I do during the game when I have nothing to offer? That could be a title of a book. Right? Like, what am I going to do during the game? Because he's not going to go walk over there and say, let's run 248 pinwheel. He doesn't even know what pinwheel is.
Right.
You know, like, so he's not going to be able to help anybody. I mean, it's ridiculous. It reminds me of the movie Catch Me If You Can, right?
Of course. Great.
You know, where Frank Abagnale goes in there and he's a doctor and he just stands back there and he says, okay, okay. And he doesn't even like the sight of blood. It's almost... Like, I don't know how Saturday would allow himself to be put in this position, because it's only going to be bad for him. I mean, I would never want to go play chess with the with a great chess against. You get embarrassed,
right? And it's now like, you know, you would think he'd be leaning on the John Foxes and the Gus Bradleys of the world, since those guys at least have the experience. But I know you had assumed, right? Like one of those two would have been the natural choice to be an interim if you're trying to salvage something out of this season, just because they at least have been there before. And so now, yes, as you point out, like if you're Jeff Saturday, you're putting your reputation on the line as a coach when you've never done it and you don't really know what you're walking into. But what makes it fascinating this week is you're taking on a Raider team that has a lot of issues in their own right now at 2-6, having just blown a third 17-plus point lead last week against Jacksonville, laying 6 or 6.5. You know, I know as bettors you say, all right, how can we fade Jeff Saturday in this new position to the max? But how do you really trust that laying a big number here with the Raiders when they've showed no ability to finish games this season?
None. And one of the strengths of Indianapolis has been their defense. And you got Gus Bradley coming back to town. He knows Derek Carr. Right, he knows what bothers Derek Carr. He's practiced against Derek Carr. He knows him as well as anybody. Okay, and so like that gives Indianapolis a little bit of an edge, you know. And a lot of it's going to come down to how interested are the Colts players in playing. I was talking to somebody the other day. I was talking to Bill. You know, we're talking about Will Anderson and how he really hasn't dominated the college landscape like everybody thought he would. Well, a lot of the problems with guys that know they're going to be top five picks in the draft is there's no real impetus to play. I mean, remember Mekhi Parsons didn't play during his senior year. He went 11th, you know, and so it's hard to get guys to play hard when they're worried about next year. And when you fire your coach, you're worried about next year. You're worried about your health. Like, I don't want to get hurt in this disaster, you know. Now, if the coach is staying, if he's going to be here forever and I got to prove myself to him, then that's a different story. But if he's the substitute teacher, what am I doing?
It's a great point. Yeah. But you think about this, a Raider team now that cuts Jonathan Abram the other day, 2019 first round pick. And that's what, 5 draft picks over the last 3 seasons that have now been, cut already. Really, Jonathan Jacobs is the one guy that the Raiders have hit on. If you look at it from the large 3,000 foot above perspective here. And so with the turmoil going on there, a team that has been really good. I mean, the one thing the Raiders have going for them heading into this week, they've been good at stopping the run. 5th against the run on that EPA allowed per play basis. That's where it becomes, as much as you can't trust them to play a full 60-minute game, I wonder with Sam Ehlinger at quarterback and a limited offensive line and Jonathan Taylor banged up, we're not sure if he's even going to play, where does the ball movement come for the Colts? And is this maybe profile as an under game if what you just talked about, Michael, and the Gus Bradley theme coming back home is going to be true here and the Raiders struggle offensively?
Well, I mean, the Raiders can't turn the ball over. I mean, that's what they can't do. And they're going to put pressure on Ehlinger because this line has not handled a TE stunt the entire season. I mean, the first play of the game, the Patriots ran a TE stunt and he was sacked for 7 yards. I mean, it was like clearly what – and one thing, when you're done playing Belichick, New England defensively – he's given you the blueprint on what you need to do to beat the team. And Patrick Graham is from the school of Belichick. He's going to utilize that with a lot of movement up front. They don't pass games very well. And Ehlinger can't see. If you get into the paint on him, he's too small. So it's going to be hard for them to make a play down the field. They have to get rid of the ball quickly. And then they've got a play caller who's never had to adjust a game. So I think that's a challenge. But what they have to do is strip the ball from Jacobs. They've got to play really good run defense. They did last week against the Patriots, even though that's not been a strength of them. Right. You know, they've played good defense against the Raiders, against the Patriots run, but the Raiders just have to get back to finishing, playing well over the course of the game, and they need Waller back. I mean, they're slow on offense. I mean, Adams is tremendous, but they don't really have – I know everybody talks about Renfro, but Renfro, if you watch him on tape, does not look like the Renfro from last year. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he doesn't. And then they don't have any – I mean, Mac Hollins is a good alternate player, but he's playing way too many plays. They need Waller on that field.
When Jacksonville went into the second half and basically said, we're not letting Adams beat us, Raiders ran 25 plays for 65 yards. And you saw like a lot of the weaknesses of the lack of speed. It was a big reason why Adams shut out one catch technically, but for 0 yards in the second half of that game. Can't wait to watch this one. I mean, there's so much going on. Colts Raiders, 6-point line there for Vegas this Sunday. Hour number one in the books. When we return, we have a big hour number two. Harry Gagnon of the Against All Odds podcast joins us in about a half hour. We'll look at some of the big underdogs on the card this week when we come back.